Good evening. The time is 8 p.m. Temperature 37 degrees.
Call sign N2LCJ, and I'm located in Cheektowaga, New York. Welcome to the Barrett Tech and Informational Net. This net meets every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Our focus is on the technical aspects of amateur radio. Whether you're an experienced operator, a new ham, or just curious about the technology behind our hobby, you're in the right place.
WA2HKS repeater, Buffalo.
During this net, we discuss topics such as equipment, antennas, propagation, digital modes, troubleshooting techniques, and emerging technologies in amateur radio. The goal is to share knowledge, learn from one another, and encourage experimentation and problem-solving within our community. All licensed amateur radio operators are welcome to participate. Please keep transmissions concise and relevant to the topic at hand. When checking in, please give the club call W2EUP, let up on your mic and ensure that you're not doubling. Then give your call sign slowly along with your name and location. This week's topic, can a Baofeng save the world? A ham radio operator's guide to preparing for doomsday. How's that? At this time, we'll take check-ins for tonight's net. Please call W2EUP.
W2EUP, KA8BYU, Roy and Blaisdell.
W2EUP, KC2XD, Rick Tanawanda.
W2EUP, this is KE2HCT, Rick and Kevin.
EUP, KK7BGQ, Bob in North Las Vegas.
W2EUP, this is KD2TFB, Kilo Delta 2 Tango, Foxtrot Bravo, Joe in Cheektowaga.
W2EUP. W2EUP, this is W2BYJ, Thomas Mobile by the Peace Bridge.
W2EUP, this is KD2GCL, George in the town of Tonawanda.
W2EUP. W2EUP, this is N2FTW, Dan in Kenmore.
W2EUP. KE2FLX, love that title.
W2EUP. W2EUP, KM7. Bravo, Oscar Papa, Las Vegas, Mark.
W2EUP. W2AJR, Andy, Cheektowaga.
EUP. This is Kilo Delta 4, Hotel Lima Victor, Marty in Duluth, Georgia.
W2EUP. W2MEG, Meg in Buffalo, New York.
2EUP. 2EUP, KC2LEF, Rickensville.
W2EUP. This is KE2GCW, Greg and Snyder.
W2EUP. W2EUP, this is KA2WCM, Joe in Amherst.
KA8BYU, KC2XD, KA8 KE2HCT, KK7VGQ, KD2TFB, W2BYJ, KD2GCL, N2FTW, KE2FLX, KM7BOP, W2AJR, KD4HLV, W2MEG, KC2LEF, KE2GCW, and KA2WCM. All right, anybody else that would like to hop on board before we begin tonight's presentation, call W2EUP.
W2EUP, this is KE2ETG, Torsten, or also Austin, on a Bofang.
Got you in there, Torsten. KE2ETG. With that, we'll move on to tonight's presentation. You can follow along with us at Bera-Tech.com. That's Bravo Alpha Romeo, Romeo Alpha Dash Tango Echo Charlie Hotel.com. Then click on the weekly topic button to see today's presentation. Unlike a lot of presentations, the PowerPoint isn't, or the log isn't vital, but it will help you to keep tabs on where we're at and where the discussion's going. As mentioned, subject for tonight's presentation is Can a Baofeng Save the World? A ham radio operator's discussion on preparing for doomsday. Now, obviously, this is a very broad topic, and we could easily turn this into a multi-part series of discussions. Heck, if there's interest, we may do just that. There are, of course, many roles the experienced operator can play during any local or national emergency. With all of the MCOM groups and services available to the amateur radio operator, we could easily turn this TechNet into a weekly discussion of MCOM and probably have enough time to fill up a year's worth of Wednesdays. But for the purposes of tonight's presentation, we're going to be focusing and touching on the practical communications of what the typical ham radio operator can do to ensure that they have an operable means of effective and efficient communication in the event of a disaster, either natural or created by man. Due to the amount of time allotted, we're not going to go far in depth, but rather serve as a springboard for future discussion. Now, to relate the discussion to the title of the presentation, we've all seen it before. Fancy blurbs and brochures and entice the public into getting their amateur radio license, selling the fact that if you have your ham license, an orange vest, and a Baofeng, that you too can be a hero and save the world. The experienced ham sees that, laughs for a second, and then says, well, I guess technically maybe. But come on. But for many hams, this was the first thing to lure them into amateur radio. Now, this is a very broad topic, and there are a lot of books and YouTube videos made on the subject as well. It's a long winter, and we're all suffering from seasonal depression, so if you want a really good read, there's a book by Joel Lambert called A Navy SEAL's Bug-In Guide, How to Turn Your House into the Safest Place on Earth. In the book, it talks about communications in the event of an emergency. Pulling one quote from the book, survival is a lot easier when you talk to other people and arrange to share resources and get news about what's happening in the surrounding area. Unfortunately, in a serious crisis, the modern communications we've all gotten used to will be among the first things to go down. An amateur radio set will let you stay in touch with the outside world and with all the other preppers on the net. So let's get into the meat and potatoes of tonight's discussion. In short, what's the plan? Well, the first thing to remember is it's going to be far more important to hear than to talk, unless there's a specific need. You're going to want to hear everything there is to hear in order to be able to digest what's going on worldwide and in your own backyard. That said, a battery-operated radio with the AM and FM broadcast bands and ideally shortwave is going to be indispensable. Police scanners that have a battery capability in order to listen to communications in your local area is also of great benefit in order to see what's going on around you and potentially offer aid and assistance in situations in your area, if possible, and if you deem reasonable and prudent. Now, to the ham radio operator or prepper, all this is pretty much a given. But for two-way communications, let's play out a potential scenario and keep it vague. After all, this is what the ham radio hero part is all about. Let's say that all communications and electricity have been knocked out and people have asked to shelter in place. The why is unimportant for the moment. There are always going to be what-ifs in any scenario, but bear in mind, we're only bouncing ideas here, which we'll get more into in the discussion part of the presentation. Let's assume that grid down means electricity, cell, and internet. Now, the following is just my opinion based on 35 years as a ham radio operator. Here goes. The first thing that many hams will do is head for their favorite VHF, UHF repeater. If the repeater's down, they'll head for a known simplex. From there, we can generally predict that hams will be fairly organized and efficient at the exchange of information. And though some will want to rag to, the understanding of what's afoot will be there. One would assume that our experience would allow all of this to happen in a decently organized fashion. The only wild card is unlicensed operators. But someone on a Baofeng isn't going to be able to interfere much on simplex anyway. Repeaters, as we know, are another story. As far as HF, I predict it will be a zoo. All it takes is for one panicked person with a legal limit linear and a beam to dominate any frequency, and there's going to be a lot of them. Having a set of ears on the situation is going to be more valuable than the ability to broadcast other than situation reports. Even if I'm wrong, there's nothing that someone in North Carolina can do about getting heart medicine to someone in Lackawanna. Based on that, the safe havens on the ham bands are likely going to be 6 meters and 220 because most radios aren't capable of it. 900 will be lit up with DMR and frequency hop spread spectrum walkie-talkies, but still may be useful. And flipping the page. Okay, page didn't want to flip. So that's my prediction of the ham bands, touched over briefly. I may be totally off base, of course, and I'd hope that cooler heads will prevail, but often they don't. Now let's bring in GMRS, FRS, CB, and MERS, the bands that many non-amateurs will think will save the world. Based on the amount of casual preppers, hardcore preppers, and people that got a Baofeng for Christmas, it's likely to be a total melee. It's easy to predict that every GMRS channel will likely be busier than CB Channel 19 after the release of Smokey and the Bandit. There will be people operating far above the legal limit and using non-FCC approved forms of communication like voice inversion scrambling and P25, which is illegal on those bands. In rural areas, this may work out well. In suburban or urban areas, every parent will be commandeering their kids' Spider-Man walkie-talkies in an effort to try and keep in contact with their neighbors and exchanging information. Of course, you can always set up radios for transmit-receive PLs but this doesn't guarantee that you'll be able to get over the top of stronger signals. It just means that you won't be able to hear them. Again, a great place to listen, but probably not ideal for two-way traffic. However, interestingly enough, preppers have found a way to incorporate GMRS, ham radio, CB, and illegal to transmit on business band frequencies in a network called AMRON, which stands for American Redoubt Radio Operators Network. More information on this can be found at HF Underground. The tactical standby frequencies are CB Channel 3, MERS Channel 3, FRS Channel 3, and 146.420 2-meter simplex. It's a long read, and it's an interesting plan worth studying, if nothing for more than for your own information. HF Underground's a wealth of knowledge for these kinds of things. I myself am fascinated by what is referred to as LPI communications, which stands for low probability of intercept. This refers to power, mode, and frequency. A great example of this is the old 47 megahertz walkie-talkie frequencies that have been long abandoned, still legal to use, and nobody's going to hear you. There are walkie-talkies available in both FM and AM in those frequencies, which are touted by HF Underground as being quote-unquote ideal for local militia communications. Now, to that point, to be clear, the only permissible use of any frequency that is against FCC regulations is when there's a life-threatening situation. For example, if you're hiking through the woods and there's no cell service and you become injured and are bleeding out, it is totally permissible to use your handheld marine radio on a Coast Guard frequency to try and contact someone to save your life. Don't ask me why a hiker would have a marine radio, but it's a good example. Using it to see if your grandma needs any soup is not. Now, as you can tell already, there are 100 different scenarios and no one clear-cut solution. And, of course, for the purposes of this net, we're purposely ignoring other bands and other radios that are against FCC regulations. We who know what they are. Radios that transmit on bands that are no longer FCC approved are plentiful and cheap. I just don't want to be the one to give anybody any ideas. Now, the one thing that I haven't brought up is Meshtastic and potential use in an emergency scenario, mainly because I don't know enough about it and how much traffic the mesh network can handle. At this point, I'd like to bring in Greg, KE2GCW, for some comment on Meshtastic's role in emergency communications. Greg, take it away.
Yeah, thank you. This is KE2GCW, Greg, with information on tonight's topic. We're talking about Meshtastic, which is a low-power, unlicensed, LoRa-based mesh that's proving itself for grid-down and remote communication. Unlike traditional infrastructure, Meshtastic forms a self-healing, decentralized network that doesn't rely on cell towers or the Internet. One of the most compelling features is GPS beaconing and tracking, so nodes with GPS broadcast their positions across the mesh, and you can actually ingest that data into ATAC for real-time situational awareness on maps. This turns a mesh into a locational tool for teams on the ground, be it SAR or expedition groups or community emergency hubs. When you pair Meshtastic with a Raspberry Pi or a Docker host, you can run a local BBS, store and forward messages, provide weather alerts from intermittent offline nodes, surveys, do check-in systems, even offline document services like offering Wikipedia pages via Kiwix and local AI search chat agents. That turns your mesh from a simple messaging platform into a local data ecosystem. And from a power standpoint, everyday carry devices like a CT1000E and the Rack with Mesh can reliably run 2 to 3 days without a charge, while nodes like the Heltec Pocket Mesh with e-ink screens can stretch weeks, doubling as a daily utility device where you can charge your cell phone off of it. Solar nodes built with outdoor enclosures, you can get them at the hardware store, or you can buy a commercial option for about $100, can keep your nodes alive for days without sun and will recharge efficiently running all winter long. There's some real-world insights where MeshTastic users have applied this technology during hurricanes in Florida and Asheville, North Carolina, restoring basic communications while the cell networks have failed, and community have been able to stay connected in large blackout events where comms have disappeared. But I'd say the biggest advantage of MeshTastic is it allows for community connectivity all around. So our Buffalo Road Mesh is continuing to grow as more nodes and users come online. We've got at least 80 that I can connect to at the moment, and I've reached over 200 in the Western New York area. We use it every day. That lets us kind of test it before a crisis and share skills with one another, and partnerships with Vera and leveraging the local repeater sites that really helped us expand the coverage, build community engagement, and the important thing is preparedness. It isn't just about tech, but it's about people working together. Back to Net Control 73.
All right, Greg. Well, I certainly do appreciate you weighing in on that. The key here, no matter the method, no matter the mode, it's all going to be useless if you don't have a way to power your radios and recharge your batteries, which is where MeshTastic shines. The winter time is a great time to consider how you charge your batteries or operate your radio without electricity. I mean, after all, it's winter. What the heck else are we going to do? Generators are fine if you have them, but according to the aforementioned Navy SEALs bug-in guide, depending on your scenario, it may not be prudent for the noise to attract unwanted attention, or you may not have or want a generator. Either way, radios don't do any good without a way to power them. Consider making a battery charger adapter for your HTs to go to a power pole connector to a LiFePO battery, or with battery clip leads or a cigarette lighter plug observing voltage requirements for the charger, and incorporating a buck or boost converter as needed. Now, if I've missed a lot or created more questions than answers or spurred some of you to give your opinion, then I've done my job here. As previously stated, my intention was to make this presentation be a springboard for a discussion of these topics because there's so much to learn, and I certainly don't know it all. In a moment, we're going to be opening it up to the floor with the question of what are some ideas you have regarding emergency communications that haven't been covered here. First, we'll take additional check-ins. Anybody else wishing to join tonight's net, please call W2EUP. Okay, starting at the top of the list, we've got Jeremy, N2UGS.
Tim and everybody on net, thanks for your presentation this evening. So yeah, I've got a couple of bell things, and what I've done to them is I've got them programmed up for FRS, GMRS. I think I've got Marine in there too, and then some local simplex frequencies. And that's what I've got in my, and I always keep it charged, at least one of them's charged, and then, let's see, if the, STF does happen, I've got lots of battery backups and inverters. But I guess when the batteries die, I'll have to talk to Bob, K2LED, on how to charge them with some solar panels. W2EUP from N2UGS.
All right, thanks for chiming in, Jeremy. Over to KBYU, Roy, any commentary on tonight's topic?
Good evening, W2EUP, KA8BYU. Yeah, I've got CB, AM, and FM, FRS, GMRS, MERS, aviation, marine, amateur frequencies. I have got radios to cover all of those spectrums. And one thing, if it has a AA or a AAA battery pack that you can get for the radio, get at least two of them. You can use rechargeables, you can use throwaway batteries, but if you can't charge your NiCad or LiPo packs or all that, you can still operate with AA or AAA batteries.
That's actually a great idea. That's something I never would have thought about. I appreciate that tip. I'm going to take that one to heart. Over to Rick, KC2XT. Anything from you tonight on tonight's topic?
KC2XT, good evening, everybody. You know, it's interesting. You don't think about these things. We probably will go into panic mode when an emergency happens, but hams are probably a little bit more prepared than everybody else, which I'm surprised that we don't have more people coming into ham radio just for that reason, the way the world is right now. Back to net, W2EUP. Thanks, Tim. KEC2XD.
You know, tongue-in-cheek, I'll see people sometimes whining about something, and I'm thinking, after the apocalypse, you're the first person I'm going to eat. Over to Rick, KE2HCT, good evening.
W2EUP, this is KE2HCT. Thanks, Tim. I think that thought is exactly why I got into it. My first radio was a Bofang BFF8HP, but it got me moving, and then I got the QRZ from Explorer, from QRZ. And, of course, I met you guys, and Tim, you got me into the HT1000s, and that's why it's all programmed. That's why I had to learn how to program them. And I've got one for each member of my family, thanks to you, Tim. And hopefully I program them well enough that we can get a hold of each other. And now I got to worry about powering them.
Well, don't forget, if you have your GMRS license, you know, use it to the full extent. And yeah, God help me, I just bought six more. Over to Robert, KK7VGQ from W2EUP. Any thoughts for tonight? Nothing heard. We'll go over to Joe, KD2TFB. It's your turn at the mic.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. You bring up a lot of good points here that you really got to plan for the power, because that's one of the biggest things is when the power goes out. I mean, during my lifetime, I think I've been through like three regional power outages. Like, you know, everything from here to New York City is cursed flat. So you got to keep those batteries charged and such like. I kind of struggle with the idea of our role in emergency communications, because I've seen some people in the services, like firefighting, they comment that somehow we just get in the way, and I find that hard to believe, but I'll leave it up to them. They're the ones who do the emergency services, but yeah, I have kind of mixed feeling about that. It's like, come on, guys, we're trying to help you, and you're saying we're getting in the way. Oh, okay. Kilo Delta 2, Tango Fox, Bravo.
Well, let me touch on that for 1 second. I was actually involved in Army Mars back, what was it, 2017, 2018. And they used to issue all Mars operatives a Department of Defense ID. They had to stop that because hams were getting into places where they really should not have been. So along that same line, there's a lot of people that don't use discretion as you would. And, you know, the need to help sometimes takes over where the training leaves off, and you get untrained operators that really don't understand the situational operation of what it's all about and only confuses things. So that can be a hindering aspect of AMCOM. Thomas, W2BYG, I think you were in and out, but I'll give you a shot.
Repeater, WA2HKS, Buffalo.
Yeah, the repeater cut me off there. Yeah, I don't really have additional comments to add, but it was a good presentation. Thanks for hosting the net tonight. It's W2BYG.
Yeah, I probably spent a lot of people's story, KA2FO.
You're a couple down the list, Carl. Stand by. Okay, over to George, KD2GCL. Anything to contribute to tonight's net?
Well, I kind of can comment on being a volunteer fireman. Yes, I've seen it where hand radio people have gotten stepped in the wrong part of the scene, and, you know, we had to chase them out, and they were like, well, we're hand radio operators. We can help you out. Well, first thing comes up is safety with us. And I was being chased by my chief to chase people out with the hand radio. That's my comment.
Right. And, you know, that's a good thought because not every situation demands a radio. But I guess it kind of goes along with the old saying that when the only thing you have is a hammer, every problem begins to look like a nail. Over to Dan, N2FTW from W2EUP.
Thank you, W2EUP. The one thing I would add are, when it comes to frequencies, one thing I have in all my code plugs, along with Marine, GMRS, MERS, ham bands, repeaters, whatnot, Google the color dot, but rather the color dot and color star frequencies. Those are frequencies that are typically associated with radios that are used on site by the construction industry. Also check out itinerant frequencies. Those are everything, most itinerant frequencies that the FCC has, you can program into a Bofang or unlocked HT. Also, if you're really looking for obscure frequencies, there's a bunch of oil spill frequencies. Oil spill frequencies in VHF. And those probably aren't going to be used in the Buffalo area and aren't likely to see much traffic. So that's it. Back to net control.
Appreciate you chiming in. Now, don't forget that there is a lot within the ham bands that we can do that, you know, is basically unexplored, especially in this area. Like, for example, P25 VHF, my radio is capable of that. P25 UHF, many of you have radios capable of that. NXDN is another valid mode. You can do DMR, anywhere on the ham bands. These are all valid modes, and just give some ideas out there. And we'll take it over to Carl, KE2FLX. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, yeah, about prepping and stuff. All the Ryobi batteries that I've come across that a cell guide or something, are now part of my backup thing for radios and all that stuff. It's part of that. I got a USB like battery pack thing. It's part of that now. But that's flexible as well. I can go 7 volts if I want.
Yeah, that's a really good point too. In this book about the bug-in guide, it talks about how to get the most out of depleted batteries, which you know, is something that anybody really that has a soldering iron knows how to do. But it's a good kind of refresher to put it in the front of your mind. And we'll go over to Mark, KM7BOP from W2EUP. Anything for the net tonight?
W2EUP, KM7BOP. Well, I was just thinking about solar. The solar is a good source, especially out here in the west, but the connectors to the different batteries, you know, you might have to buy a DC to DC charge controller or something like that. I know Home Depot and Harbor Freight can carry solar panel kits, you know. They could look into that. You could, if these controllers have different connectors like USB or Anderson power pole or whatever. I mean, the big thing is getting the power from the solar panel into your battery. So I guess that might take some research. What do you think, KM7BOP?
Well, I've played around with solar panels to a limited degree, and you're correct about the charge controller, and different charge controllers work with different battery types. Geez, that's a whole subject unto itself, and maybe one of the remaining people that is coming up has more knowledge on that subject than myself. But no, you're absolutely correct. With that, we'll turn it over to Andy, W2AJR from W2EUP.
Yep, W2EUP, W2AJR. For me, emergency communications involves, like you mentioned in your presentation, a battery-powered crank, shortwave AM/FM radio. And for me, primarily, communications is going to be for my group. Outside information is going to come through the AM/FM radio, if there is any, and then communications with my group becomes the priority. I think things should be simple, things should be portable, things should be ready to go in one place, and people should practice using them so in case there is an emergency, they know exactly what they're doing, or at least they have some kind of an idea. That's it for me. Back to you, Tim.
You know, that is an excellent thought. You know, as far as identifying who you need or would want to stay in contact with, and even everybody picking a role in such things. Marty, my old buddy out in Georgia, how you doing tonight, pal? W2EUP.
Well, I hope my battery is going to stay good enough for this transmission, but I wanted to say hello. I really don't have much to add. You guys are covering a lot, entering a lot. Definitely very deep in what you're doing, but thank you very much. Enjoyed your presentation, but I'll stay here for the rest of the duration and see what else you got. And good to hear everybody. 7W2EM, 84HLV, I'm back to net control.
Yeah, great to hear you out there, Marty. We miss you out here in the frozen, icy gulag that is Western New York. And we're going to bring it over to Meg, W2MEG from W2EUP. Meg, anything to contribute to tonight's topic?
Oh, gosh. Being a new ham, I really don't have that much to comment. But I do have my GMRS license, just in case. And I do own quite a bit of bow banks. I think I have 5 of them now, along with some others. It's a real problem. But thank you for the net, Tim. This was a great topic. Really enjoying it. I'll give it back over to you. W2MEG, back to net control.
You know, so many people on frequency have their GMRS license. We ought to have an overflow frequency on one of their GMRS repeaters. Ray, KC2LEF, good evening.
This is Ray, KC2LEF, love the ID. Yeah, I have a bunch of portables here, extra batteries, and I made a charging unit for myself that I can use off the car battery that I've got, you know, worst comes to worst, to get the driveway. You know, I kind of worked myself around because we didn't have power for 3 days one time, and that's kind of why I got a regular generator for the house. And I'm pretty comfortable. So it's really a case of joy. I'm back to that control.
Cleaned it, changed the oil, ran it for a little bit, cleaned the carburetor, cleaned the gas tank, and just set it aside. And fortunately, I haven't had to use it, but it's always there waiting. And if you have a generator, remember, it's not like a toaster. That means it you can't just pull it out of the cupboard every time you want a slice of toast. You have to at least maintain it. Greg, KE2GCW, appreciate you coming on board with tonight's net. And did you have any further commentary?
KE2GCW, Greg, no further commentary. Back to net control.
All right, thanks again. Now we'll bring it over to my buddy Joe, KE2WCM from W2EUP. Anything for tonight's net?
Unfortunately, I have a low battery, so I can't really say too much. KA2WCM.
No! kind of ironic, isn't it? Torsten, KE2ETG, good evening.
Good evening. Not much to add at this point, but thank you for the interesting discussion.
Participating in tonight's net. Okay, in the meantime, we've also got Mike KC2YTJ in and out via AIM. And 1 second, I flip the page. Calling, didn't quite get your call. You're kind of on the fringe of the repeater. Try one more time.
W2PE KK7 VGQ with a recheck.
Line 6, Tim.
Yep, I got it. Go ahead.
Limitations to a break.
property identifier. That's how I got bumped the last time. And